A woman meets the man of her dreams. He's handsome, he's smart, and he's very charming. They get married, build a life together, and then he disappears. Let's talk true crime. Hello and welcome to Hell No, a true crime podcast with your host, Lauren Lucio. Today's case is different from what we usually discuss, and that's all I'm going to say about that for now. Let's just get into it. In 1992, a 35-year-old man arrived at the U.S. Naval Base in Guantanamo. He didn't arrive in an official way, though. This man arrived soaking wet and asking for political asylum. He told a heroic story about swimming from Cuba, battling sharks and treacherous conditions along the way. It was a miracle he survived. He tells U.S. officials, hey, look, I'm over Castro, I'm over communism, I fled Cuba. I was an Air Force major there, but again, I'm done with communism. And America was like, wow, that's incredible. That's a crazy journey you've been on. It's amazing that you survived. We checked out your story. We've checked you out. Everything tracks. So why don't you go live with family in Miami? And the man says, yep, cool. That's where I'll go. And he moves to Miami under this political asylum situation he's in, which means he is now living in America legally and legitimately. So he's fled Cuba and he got political asylum and now he's in America. The man's name is Juan Pablo Roque, and he is incredibly handsome. Not only are his looks captivating, but his incredible story about the, you know, swimming through sharks and the deep blue dangerous sea all the way from Cuba to Guantanamo to be free of communism, it absolutely enthralled everyone who heard it. It was in the news. His impressiveness, it doesn't end there, though. Juan, he joins a group called Brothers to the Rescue, and what they do is incredibly brave. The Brothers to the Rescue consists of pilots just like Juan, who exiled and now they fly over searching the ocean for fleeing Cubans on rafts, or even worse, maybe their raft has sunk and they're you know, drowning at sea. So they fly over and they look for these situations to rescue their fellow Cubans fleeing to try to make it to America. Could this man be any more of a heartthrob? He is like a hero character out of a book. He is just handsome and he's brave and he is helping people. You would expect to read this exact character in a novel. One, he didn't just flee Cuba. He then goes on to help other Cubans fleeing. He is saving lives. He even, okay, amongst all of this, all of everything he has going for him, he even published an autobiography. So he's a writer as well. And he titled it Deserter. And he was very outspoken when it came to Castro and the communism regime. And he wrote this book and he's good looking and he's saving people. He was on a mission to free Cuba and to liberate Cubans. I mean, wow. He may have been a busy man, but he also really wanted to make time to get a family of his own. Dating was certainly not a problem for him. I bet he could almost date any woman he wanted. But one woman caught his eye. Ana Margarita Martinez had noticed a new devout member of her church, and she even noticed how handsome he was. I'm sure she knew all about how he arrived in America, his heroic tale, what he stood for, all of this amazing things that the whole community already knew about Juan. So Ana, she definitely would have known this. She also noticed the line of women drooling over him. And you know, that wasn't her style. She wasn't looking to compete for any man's attention. It's not how she is. Anna was a single mother. She was focused on her child. She's focused on her church. She's focused on being a great mom, providing for her family. And Juan, he just couldn't resist her wholesome values. One day, he goes up to Anna and he compliments her smile. And this sparked a flame. Soon after this, they began a relationship. The gorgeous couple were incredibly happy. It seemed like a fairy tale to not only those around them, but also to Anna. Juan was so charming, attentive, brave. He had this heroic status around him. And at home, he would even do the dishes and do the cleaning, and he just seemed to be perfect. And I'm sure everyone was surprised when, after only 6 months of dating, Juan asked Anna to marry him. But the real surprise came. The surprise wasn't that he asked. The surprise was that she said no. She said no, not because she didn't love him, not because she didn't find him attractive or that he was an amazing match. She just thought it was too soon. Anna had been through two divorces already at her young age, and her last divorce was very rough. Her second husband was reported to be abusive mentally and verbally. Anna's family, though, they loved Juan. The exile community loved him, and everyone saw him as this hero. But Anna wanted to be sure this marriage was the one that would last. She really wanted to make sure she knew everything about Juan before saying yes. They kept dating and their relationship grew stronger. It only grew stronger. So when 3 years went by and he proposed again, this time she didn't hesitate. She said yes. Surely after 3 years of dating, you know a person as good as you can, right? Anna and Juan's wedding day was on April 1st, 1995. Everyone was excited and happy for the young couple, and all seemed perfect. But if everything really was perfect, we wouldn't be talking about this case right now. After getting married, things changed. Well, Juan changed, actually. Anna, she waited 3 years after his first proposal to ensure she knew him well enough to commit. And still, he hid a dark side until after they were married. Juan exhibited paranoia. He became controlling and manipulative towards Anna. He didn't show much interest in communicating with her family. And he made a friend at Brothers to the Rescue. This friend of his had also been in the Cuban Air Force and had also fled Cuba. This friend would come over to Anna and Juan's home, and he and Juan would speak in Russian to each other around Anna. And Anna's like, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I didn't know you could speak Russian. Could you imagine that? Could you just imagine that? Knowing someone for over 3 years, being in a close relationship with them, marrying them, sleeping beside them every night, and then one day they just start flawlessly speaking Russian, and you had no idea that they could do that. That is, you know, that would make the hairs on the back of my neck stand up for sure. Because it's like, whoa, whoa. What else are you? What else you got going on back there? I don't know. So Anna says to Juan, whoa, wait, what's going on here? And Juan says everyone in the Cuban Air Force had to learn Russian. I guess at one point in time, the Soviet Union ran the Cuban Air Force. So that actually did track. And of course, Anna knew that. That was actually true. So she's like, okay, that explains how you know Russian. Now, I don't know much about the history side of things when it comes to Cuba and the Soviet Union, so I can't go into more detail. I did check it out briefly. I got a history timeline. I read through that regarding this, and it tracks. It makes sense that he can speak Russian. So that's why it was so easy for Juan to explain this away. And Anna is basically like, okay, yes, you both know Russian, but why are you speaking it to each other in front of me right now? And he says, well, you know, we don't want to forget how to speak it. We've learned it. We don't want to lose it. And we're not talking about, you know, anything that we don't want you to hear. We're just talking about regular old stuff. We just want to, you know, keep it up to scratch. So don't worry. Okay. Anna noticed that he was the one who seemed worried, though. She noticed he was tossing and turning at night, just having horrible nights filled with stress, to the point she asks him, "Are you all right? What's going on?" And Juan, he would say he was worried about work things. So whether that might be finances or upcoming jobs, not too sure. I didn't get many details on that. He was just like, "I'm stressed because of work." And she's like, "Okay." I mean, being part of Brothers to the Rescue, it would be very rewarding. But also thinking about the people you couldn't save, I could see that keeping someone up at night. But was that what he was so stressed about? What was he so anxious and, you know, losing sleep over? What was happening in his head? As we've been talking about, Juan did join Brothers to the Rescue. And as important and incredible that work was, it didn't pay. It didn't pay. That was volunteers who put in their own money, time, and resources to do that. People were like, "Here's my plane. Let's fly it over and find people who are in the ocean right now who need to be saved." And they're like, "Here's money for fuel." Like, they were funding this all themselves. So to make money, Juan would do a variety of jobs. So when he told Anna he had to assist in moving a yacht, this was a paid job that he was going to do. And he had to go to Key West. I'm not very familiar with Florida. Not even sure where Key West is, but he had to go there and he had to do something with a yacht. That's what he was telling Anna. But this gave her a very uneasy feeling. She's like, "Okay, but you don't really ever leave, and now you're leaving, and this doesn't feel right." So she had a feeling about this. February 24th, 1996, 10 months after their wedding, is when Juan says, "Okay, bye, just gonna go move this yacht for some cash in Key West, and I'll be right back in a couple days. Call me if you need anything." And Anna said, "Don't go. Don't go. I've got a weird feeling here. I just feel something isn't right." And he's like, "I'm going. Bye." So he leaves. Soon after he left, the same day, Anna decided to ring his cell phone. No answer. She tried again and again and again, still no answer. And she kept trying and trying and trying many, many, many times. She is suspicious. Okay. She's very suspicious at this point. So she decides to have a look at what he has taken with him and what he has left behind. So she goes into the room and she starts opening drawers. But there wasn't much to see because he took all of his clothes with him. His drawers were empty. It was like he had moved out. Anna also found her husband's wallet with everything inside of it. He didn't take his ID. He didn't take his bank cards, nothing. He left it all there. But why would he move out and leave his identity behind? Why would he do that? She wanted more information. She wanted to uncover more clues. She was desperate to piece this puzzle together. And then she remembers, where's his vehicle? Let me search his vehicle. He had left a spare set of car keys in their home, and she knew exactly where they were because he was kind of nonchalantly stressing that she knew that information the day before. So Juan, he loved his Jeep. He drove a Jeep Cherokee, and he had mentioned several times before leaving, "Hey, my spare keys are here. My spare keys are here. Anna, are you looking? My spare keys are here. If you need to move my Jeep, this is where my spare keys are." And she's like, "Okay, I get it. Your spare keys are there." But now it was seeming like an important detail. Juan had parked his car in a parking garage in the city, in Miami. And Anna knew where because she went right to it. She found it quite quickly. When she searched the vehicle, she found her husband's keys. Like, the set of keys was locked in the car. His home key, his car key, everything was in there in a bag. And also she found his cell phone, the one she had been trying to call and call and call. It was just locked in his Jeep with his keys in a bag in this parking garage in Miami. Now she's thinking, okay, he's abandoned his wallet, all of his ID, his credit cards, his keys, his cell phone, and his vehicle, but he's taken his clothes, his Rolex, you know, the necklace that she gave him with a cross on it. He's taken all that. So what's going on here? Why is he taking certain things and leaving certain things? By this point, one thing was clear to Anna, and she realized that he was probably never coming back. She thought perhaps Juan had gone back to Cuba for an underground political meeting for those going against Castro, and this scared her because of the level of danger involved. It would make sense that he would keep that a secret from her because she wouldn't want him to go because, you know, it's very dangerous. But it would also make sense that he was involved in that because, again, he was very outspoken against Castro. He wanted to save his fellow Cubans, and he, you know, he had that Air Force training so he could fly over there. So is this what he was doing? What was going on here? Has he disappeared to join a dangerous political gathering? Has he left her? Did he meet another woman? She doesn't know. She doesn't know what's going on. She wasn't sure what, but she was sure that Juan had disappeared. A couple days passed when word gets out that four Brother to the Rescue volunteers died after their planes were shot down by the Cubans while flying over the Florida Strait. Anna heard this and she assumed the worst. As soon as she could, she spoke to another member of the organization and she asked him, was Juan one of the pilots that was shot down? And she held her breath and she waited for the answer, but the man told her no, he was not one of the pilots. So then where the hell is Juan? She doesn't have to wait long for her entire world to fall apart, but in a way she could have never imagined. Out of all the scenarios I'm sure that she was running through in her mind, this certainly was not one of them. It had been 3 days Anna was looking for Juan, and on the third day, news broke. And when I say news broke, I mean the news fucking broke. Anna was informed to turn on her TV and watch CNN, and what she saw shocked her. She couldn't believe what she was hearing and what she was seeing. On the TV, she saw her husband, alive and well, wearing the Rolex, wearing the necklace that she had given him, wearing his clothes, but he wasn't in America. No, he was not in America. He was in the country he fled. Juan was back in Cuba and he was on the news talking about it. Juan was saying how he had successfully went to America, penetrated a terrorist group called Brothers to the Rescue. But why would he be saying this? Well, he said this because he was sent over to America by Cuba as, wait for it, a spy. Yeah, he was in, what do they call it? Deep fake, deep cover. He was deep undercover. Yeah. Yep, he was in fact working for Castro. He didn't hate communism like he told everybody. He loved it. He didn't love America like it appeared. He denounced it. Denounced it. So basically he was like, F that, F this. This is who I am. I went in there. I gained information. I pretended to be somebody I wasn't. Look at this intel I brought back. Yep, he had fooled everyone for almost 4 years, and now his mission had come to an end, so he went back to Cuba and then was very open about what he had done. Anna realizes, well, it took her a while. She said at first she didn't believe him, but Anna had been married to an undercover spy sent over to gain intel for Castro. Nobody could have saw that coming. Nobody ever suspected anything. And the only reason that he married Anna was to fit in better undercover. He never loved her. He never wanted to marry her. He was never this perfect man. This was all part of his cover. Juan spoke openly in Cuban television interviews about his mission, and what hurt Anna the most was when he was asked, hey Juan, you were deep undercover in America for a long time pretending to be somebody you weren't. What are you going to miss most about that life you were faking over there? And he says, you know, the thing I'm going to miss the most, you know, it's going to have to be my Jeep Cherokee. His Jeep, his car. Anna was in shock. She was like, well, he's only saying that to protect me. He's, you know, he's been forced back to Cuba. He's been captured. He's been brainwashed. Look at him. He looks really tired. And she was, you know, she really couldn't believe that this man who she had loved and married and has a house with, and he helped raise her kids, and they slept in the same bed every night, that what he was saying on television was true. She was like, I just don't believe it. He's been forced to do this. But unfortunately, it was all true. Juan Pablo was a spy living in America to gather information to bring back to Cuba and stop Brothers to the Rescue. So I'm sure he had more going on in his mission than that. But from what I can understand, a lot of it had to do with that organization, Brothers to the Rescue. Juan gained information on that organization. He took that information back to Cuba. And then what? A day or two later, four pilots get shot down and die. And I mean, they would have had to know exactly where those pilots were. They would have had to have intel on that. So that's, I don't know. It's just so haunting to think that Juan pretended to be these guys' friends and then they died because of information that he passed on. So it takes months for Anna to come to this realization that the man she married was not actually the man she married. And this made me think about their wedding day. Because was it a coincidence that they married on April Fool's Day? Because remember, their wedding was on April 1st. So did that just, you know, did that just happen? Or who set that date? Was that part of Juan's twisted plan to marry his American wife on an American day of pranks and jokes? Was this some type of, you know, disgusting thing that he could laugh about later? Anna does start to reflect on the days leading up to when Juan disappeared. So before Juan said his last goodbye to Anna, which she had no idea that was their last goodbye, she noticed that he was looking sharp. He had a fresh, stylish haircut. He bought new suits and even a Rolex. Later, it was speculated strongly that Juan actually had a girlfriend back in Cuba. He had left to pursue this mission in America. And after years of being away from her, he decided he had to go back right then and there. And that's why it all happened so quickly. So did he actually go back quite quickly to reconnect with this woman he had left, and then he got this haircut and he looked really good and he brought back this expensive Rolex and this crazy story about being undercover, and he was like, hey, I'm back, aren't you impressed with me? I'm not really sure, but I did read that was definitely brought up. Was his mission supposed to be longer though? Because it seemed like he left quite quickly. It was like one day he woke up and he was like, well, I'm done with this. I've gathered enough evidence. I miss my girlfriend. I've been fake married long enough. I have what it takes to take down Brothers to the Rescue. I'm going to bug out now. And then he just left. I mean, that's what it seems like. Not only did this leave Anna feeling angry and violated, but she needed months of therapy before she could even come to terms with what the fuck had just happened. With Juan gone, she couldn't make payments to her home or their cars. She went from being married with two incomes coming in to, in the blink of an eye, in the snap of a finger, being alone. So this made her, she had to sell her house. She had to sell these cars. The financial aspect was crushing enough. But on top of that, the exile community, they didn't trust her. She was even asked to leave the funeral of one of the brothers to the rescue that was killed right after Juan fled, because Juan was believed to have a hand in the four deaths by bringing back private information to the Cubans. So the community that had loved her and praised her husband as a hero had now turned on her, and they would ignore her and treated her like a pariah. And Anna was even being slammed in Spanish media. That's what I read, Spanish media. So I don't know if that, you know, particularly mean the Spanish media in America. I'm not sure, but it just said that in the Spanish media, they were all like pointing their finger at Ana. She knew she was betrayed and lied to by Juan, but the community had heavy doubts that she wasn't in on the espionage. They were like, we think you had something to do with this. And it was very hard for her to convince them otherwise. Very, very hard. They were like, you were in on this. You knew he was a spy and all of this horrible things they were accusing her of, which she had no part in. She was blindsided probably more than everybody else because she was the closest to him. I can't imagine filing for divorce was a simple task in her situation, but by 1998, the marriage was annulled. Okay, I'm familiar with this term. I wasn't exactly sure what that means. I do know it means the marriage is over, but I didn't know technically what it meant, but it means that the marriage had no legal existence, so she had it annulled. I guess that is really fitting for this exact situation because she never knew who she was actually married to in the first place. Ana shocks the world when she decided to do something that had never been done before. She brings a lawsuit against the Cuban government for sexual battery for every single time her and Juan had sex. It was the Cuban government that sent Juan over to America to become a mole in the exile community to bring back information. It was the Cuban government who approved his marriage to Ana. She even says they would have had to approve this marriage. He wouldn't be allowed to just get married unless they were like, yes, you can do that when you're undercover. And it's believed that he did this, that he got married just so, you know, his cover seemed really legit. Oh, look at me. I'm married. Oh, I have kids. Oh, I have a house. Oh, I'm part of this organization. Oh, I'm active in my community and so on and so forth. Oh, I go to church with my wife. It was just really to seal that identity that he was creating for himself. So the reason she can go forward with this lawsuit is because her sexual relations with Juan were under false pretenses. He had lied about everything. And, you know, she never consented to have sex with this spy guy that he actually was. She thought she was having sex with her husband, who was a completely different man to who he actually was. Therefore, there was no consent any time they ever had sex. It took a few years to go through the courts, but in the end, she was able to sue the Cuban government on the rape charges, and she was awarded a payout of $27 million. What I don't know is how she got her money. I can't see the Cuban government being like, oh, you win, here you go, here's 27 million. I mean, I just can't see that being an easy transaction. I'm sure perhaps there was an economical way of getting to it. I did read some things about frozen assets and Cuba and America, so I'm not really sure. I don't know all the finer details when it comes to her actually receiving that money, getting that $27 million from the Cuban government, you know, but I really hope that that wasn't too hard for her because she really needed that money to rebuild her life. Ana, she herself, she was actually born in Cuba and she came to America when she was 6 years old. She had been married twice before. And like I said, her second husband was just horrible with physical and verbal abuse. And then her third husband is a spy who married her as part of his disguise to like fit in. She's had to start over multiple times in her life, so I hope this time she can do it with a hefty bank account. It won't take away the trauma because she, you know, this is obviously going to be very traumatic for her to learn all of this, but it will certainly make getting help and rebuilding a lot easier. So it will really help, but again, you know, it doesn't make everything better. Juan, he went back to Cuba. So yeah, so he pretended to flee Cuba for America and then he actually fled America to get back into Cuba. And I read he got married once he was there and had children. I read a lot, you know, but I don't really know what to believe. He retired from the Air Force, and in another article I read that he enjoys his retired life, living on a pension and growing a variety of plants and trees. He's really into gardening. He's really into his car. Apparently he has a French car now he's really into. I also read that he sold that Rolex he brought back from America, and he lives a seemingly peaceful life. And when he got back to Cuba, they were like, whoa, you're a hero. And he was held to very high regards. I even think he got a promotion, and I think he had a lot of benefits from that. So now, being 2024, he'd be in his 70s. He'd be about 74 years old now. Who knows? Who knows what he's doing? Who knows if what he says or what gets printed about him is the truth? I mean, he is an expert in pretending to be someone he is not. I believe he is wanted by the American government for charges definitely related to this espionage. So he can't go ever go back to America, or he will just be in jail forever. Juan was not the only mole dropped into the exile community in America to suss out what was going on, what information they had, and then bring that back to Cuba. It was reported there was 10 and possibly more moles snooping around, gaining intel, and lying about who they were. Netflix made a show called The Wasp Network, and it was about this. It was about Anna and Juan and everything Juan was doing. I still haven't watched it. I didn't watch it before I wrote this. I probably won't watch it after. But Anna, she actually filed a lawsuit against the show as well in 2020, as she felt they portrayed her as someone who she wasn't at all. She did not like how, you know, they portrayed her character. And this is supposed to be based on real life or a true story. And she's watching this character based on her, and she's like, did not like it at all. So yeah, again, I didn't watch it, so I don't know what her character is like in the show, but she said they made her look like a party girl and they casted her in a really, really bad light. So yeah, she filed a lawsuit against them about that. I could not find an outcome of that lawsuit, so I don't know if it's still going through court or what's happening with that, or if it got dropped. I'm not sure, but she was really, really unhappy about how she was portrayed in that Netflix show. That concludes this week's episode. If you want to stay updated on what's going on with the podcast, give us a follow on Instagram or TikTok at hellno_atruecrimepodcast. I will say I don't have much going on it. I really should make more updates. It is something I'm working on, but give it a follow. You never know when I'll make a post or an update. I find social media exhausting, but I'm working on it. Join me next week as we dive back into the dark side of life and death.